Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the SoxProspects.com podcast. It is mid-March. We are recording this for the final time before our trip to Fort Myers. Gentlemen, I know I'm excited. I'm sure you are as well. I want to thank you all for downloading or streaming. My name is Chris Hatfield. I am the executive editor of SoxProspects.com. I'm coming to you live, or not, I always say live. It's recorded. But I'm here in Sox Prospects Mid-Atlantic in our nation's capital. Happy to finally be on the horn after some technical difficulties. First with our managing editor, whose computer is working just fine, finally, today, after having his issues previously, Matthew Hegel. Hi, Matt.
Yep. Hey, Chris. No issues for me today, so I've been all good. But excited to get down to spring training and get this last podcast in the can before then.
Mm-hmm. And not able to say that he's not having any technical issues today is our director of scouting, Ian Kundle. Thanks for finally joining us, Ian.
Yeah, no problem. It is what it is. And I'm going to be in Florida on Tuesday, so it's all right. We'll make it work.
30 or 40 technical performance out of you today, I think.
You know what? My computer's in its old. It's past prime years. So
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well,
anyway, basically today we're just going to get through this queue of questions that we have from you guys, and we got a couple of new listener questions today. So from people who happened to be online when I put feelers out about 3 hours before we recorded that we have room for questions if people wanted to send them in. So we've got some good questions in that we want to get to. And before we get to all that, first, we want to thank the Ludlow Thieves, the official band of the SoxProspects.com podcast. Go check out their stuff on iTunes. The link is in the description on the news page for the blog post, for the news page post for the podcast. So check them out. Or just search for Ludlow Thieves on iTunes. It's L-U-D-L-O-W. Thieves, like, you know, people who steal things, just like they've stolen my musical heart. No, so we want to thank them, and I think that, make sure, I haven't said this in a while, but rating and reviewing is a great way to help the podcast, guys. So if you listen on iTunes or on Stitcher or however you listen, rating and reviewing helps get us out to more people, so it's always very appreciated and encouraged. If it's a quick and easy way to help us out. So without further ado, let's hop into it, gentlemen, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Our first question, we had gotten to half of this email previously, but Frank sent from the internet sends in a question. He was curious about Anderson Espinoza or Michael Kopech, who debuts first. And I note that he sent this in before Michael Kopech broke his hand, of course, as we spoke about with Jim Callis of MLB.com this past week. And although apparently we're hearing 3 to 6 weeks is the newest report, so that actually sounds a lot better than it might have been at first.
Well, I thought it was in 3 to 6 weeks they'll reevaluate and see where they are.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't like a, I don't think at least, I'll check while you're talking, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Interesting. That sounds a lot more reasonable.
But
anyway.
Not a full season.
Exactly. But thank you for the question, Frank. And I don't know about you guys, I think it seems like it really could go either way, and that they're so far away, it's hard to tell, especially now that Kopech has suffered this injury. Would you agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I guess, taking a guess if I had to, since that's what he's asking, I guess I'd go Espinoza, mm-hmm. because, you know, he's such a wunderkind. I think he can just sort of maybe really excel through the system quickly, and also this fractured hand obviously doesn't bode as well for Kopech moving quickly. So
yeah,
I just think even though he's younger and less experienced, I think that Espinoza is such a wunderkind. He'll sort of speed through the system.
Yeah, I mean the only recent comp in terms of a high school pitcher who has made his way through the system up to the majors would be Henry Owens. Is all I can really think of, right? At least in terms of being that kind of a prospect. And I mean, he was drafted in 2011 and he made his major league debut in 2015. So, you know, if you were to apply that same timeline to a healthy Michael Kopech, he was drafted in 2014. So he would in theory make his debut in 2018. Have they had a international starting pitcher? I guess Felix DuBrant would probably be the last one. Right? I mean, am I forgetting someone that made it to the majors? And DuBrant signed, He made his debut in 2005, and he made it to the majors in 2010. So, you know, applying that to Anderson Espinosa, you'd be looking at 2020, which I think we kind of all agree would be taking the slow boat with his stuff. So there really isn't a comp that I can think of there. Ian, what do you think on that? Is it just there? So to me, it's just the performance will determine, the stuff will determine how quickly they rise.
Oh no, I think it's Espinosa and it's not close.
Okay.
And here's why. He's 18. He just turned 18, I think, but his present stuff is better than Kopech. His delivery is better than Kopech. His command is better than Kopech. His controls is better than Kopech. Every part of him as a pitcher is better presently than Michael Kopech.
All right.
And that's not like saying that's not like supposed to be like putting down Kopech, because Kopech has great stuff. You know, he's just got some things to work on. But yeah, I think as long as Espinosa stays healthy, I think it's pretty much a lock that he'll debut before Kopech.
All right, fair enough. Thanks for the question, Frank. Our next questions come from I think it's Bijan. Sorry if I butchered your name, but he had three questions, and typically I like it when readers or listeners keep their emails to one question, but what the heck? I'm feeling generous today. His first question, what can we expect from Christopher Acosta, who by the time he was signed was considered to be an even better prospect than Anderson Espinosa, if I remember right. And I think what you're remembering is the MLB.com international prospect rankings had Espinosa ranked 10th and Christopher Acosta ranked 6th. But Baseball America's rankings had Anderson Espinosa ranked 4th and Acosta ranked 11th. And Ben Badler, who does a lot of the international stuff at BA, I really think his work. I think he is able to concentrate almost exclusively, I think, on international matters. So I think he's able to kind of dive into that a little bit more. And it's worth noting, while their bonuses were close, it's not really apples to oranges. Christopher Acosta getting, what was it, $1.5 million, Matt, out of the Dominican, yep, Isn't the same as Anderson Espinosa getting 1.8 out of Venezuela. The 1.8 million doubled the previous signing bonus record for a Venezuelan player, and that was Francisco Rodriguez that got 900 grand. So, to me, you know, when you kind of compare them, it's kind of like, you know, comparing money from one country to money from another country, literally almost. So it's just a different, different thing. To me, it's too hard to say what we can expect out of Acosta, really. I mean, he's in camp, yes? Do we know this? Is he invited to the U.S. camp?
Yeah, I would assume so. He was at Instrux last year.
Yeah, yeah. So. We have him projected for the Gulf Coast Red Sox. Seems to me, I don't know, what do you guys think? It's hard because he was so up and down last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the issue with any DSL player in general. We just don't get a look at him. There aren't that many reports back. You know, it's pretty limited scouting scene sort of reports that we get regularly out of that. So we're sort of waiting to see Acosta this spring. And, you know, now that he's going to be stateside, we believe this season, you know, we'll get a lot better read on him. I think in general, like you said, that 1.8 looks even bigger than the 1.5, considering the country and the biggest bonus in the past. So it seems clear to me that the Red Sox at least considered Espinosa the better prospect at the time of the signing.
Sure, and it seems like they were willing to push him quicker as well. You know, with the fact that he was promoted to, you know, basically start the Gulf Coast League season, they don't do that unless they were already more or less planning to. So. Yeah, tough to really project Christopher Acosta at this point. His next question, Ronnie Araudes had a promising first year. Where will he open the season, and what can we expect from him? Same thing on the second question, but in terms of where he starts, on the site we have him projected for the Gulf Coast League. I'm inclined to say Lowell. What do you guys think?
No, he'll go to Lowell.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, do you agree with that?
He'll go to Lowell. He's not going to start in the GCL, yeah. I don't think.
Yeah, we usually have our powwow on the projections down in camp. I think that needs to happen.
I think what stands out for him from what we heard is his polish. You know, Ian saw him, so I think that that makes sense for as a young player that he'd be ready for Lowell with the polish. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily the upside, I don't think, but he's probably ready to move up to Lowell at this point.
Yeah, so I would say for folks checking the website out, the projections, wait until like Friday or Saturday before they're a little bit of a work in progress right now. And his final question is, between Jordan Prochession and Austin Rye, we have two catching prospects nearly the same age. Is there any hope they'll have a big league future in them? Yeah, that's a tough one to answer now as well. Ian, I guess, what are your thoughts on that question?
I think for Rye, it's too early to tell. He was terrible last year in Lowell. I mean, you can't really gloss over the fact that he couldn't hit, and more concerningly, he couldn't field really. I think Chaz wrote about him and talked about how there were games where he just couldn't catch the ball behind the plate. Not even talking about blocking balls in the dirt. He literally could not catch a fastball that was a strike. And that was really concerning. And at the plate, he just looked lost. He struck out a ton. He has really weird swing mechanics that I am not convinced at all will play against any sort of velocity, because he's basically directly straight up and there's no load. It's just a leg kick and go forward. So I'm a little concerned about how that's going to play against any sort of decent pitching, especially considering he was terrible against Lowell pitching, the Penn League pitching is not very good, frankly. Right. With Prochession, I think that, yeah, there's a pretty good chance he's a big leaguer. I don't think he's any sort of like an impact guy or a starter. No. He's probably a backup catcher at best, but that's fine. I mean, you took him in the 14th round and gave him 50K. If that turns into a guy who even has a Dan Butler-like career, that's a success in my eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds about right. Was it 40, 50K? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what I saw of him last year is he's a guy who you like behind the plate and taking command from back there, and he's pretty good defensively. He didn't really stand out to me offensively, despite what he did in Greenville en route to being named an all-star in the South Atlantic League. He was 22 for last season as well, so when he got up to Salem, which is a little bit more age-appropriate, he was a lot more challenged at the plate.
Yeah, at the plate, he's a guy, he'll take a walk. He has a good idea of the strike zone, but he's just not a very good hitter. I mean, he's got a decent little swing and a little bit of pop, but he's not a guy who's going to, make any difference at the bat. He's going to have – defense is what's going to carry him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, before we continue, I just want to take a second, and we need to talk about SeatGeek. Everyone, we've talked about this for a couple weeks now. If you ever get frustrated trying to buy tickets online, some sites make it complicated. SeatGeek doesn't. You need to give them a shot. I have. You should too. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. SeatGeek pulls all the tickets available for whatever game event that you're looking for into one place from multiple websites. It's like I like to compare it to Kayak or to Trivago for travel. SeatGeek does that. For buying tickets online. And plus, you can see when ticket prices fall, you can set up an alert, and they'll let you know. Set an alert for an upcoming event. Get that email when you know prices drop. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek gets a grade based on the value for that seat. So you look for the green ones, nice bright green tickets that shows you which ones are the best deals. You can immediately find what seats for the game, what seats for the concert, what seats for probably the circus, if you're into that kind of thing, which ones are the best values that are available, and grab them right through SeatGeek. You can even use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from that seat. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about their prices. Never get any surprise fees and charges at checkout. You're going to see everything that you're going to pay right up front, unlike some other websites. And like I've been saying, you can get a $20 rebate and help out the podcast the first time you make a SeatGeek purchase. Here's what you have to do. You download the free SeatGeek app, you go to the settings tab, and go to add a promo code, and here's the promo code. It's SP20, SP20. Think about it. Sox prospects, $20. Easy to remember. Once you do that, you make your first purchase, SeatGeek is going to send you a $20 rebate after you've made your first purchase. When I made my first purchase, it obviously wasn't through this deal, but I got kind of a similar one. So they definitely are good on it. It's a great deal. Check it out. It's worth doing, even just the first time. Want to try it out, see if it works or not. So make sure you download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code SP20. Try it out today. Let us know how it worked. Let us know how you liked it. And thanks again to SeatGeek for being the official sponsor of the SoxProspects.com podcast. Let's move on, guys, to our next listener email. I always want to say reader. They're listeners. And Bob asks, I think this is going to be a pretty easy answer, but hi guys, can power arms be developed? Take someone like Trey Ball. On his current trajectory, he might is in scare quotes, be at number 5. You have him listed as 89 to 92 miles per hour, tops out at 95 miles per hour. Could you, for example, say forget about a third or fourth pitch and work on mechanics and conditioning and get him to say 92 to 95 and top out at 97? Do teams do that? I'd rather have a bunch of power bullpen arms than a bunch of spot starters. Bob, thanks for the email, Bob. Seems a pretty simple answer here is no. Would you guys agree? Ian?
I mean, pitchers can gain velocity, but it's a very case-by-case thing. You know, some guys, as you mentioned, it's mechanics. Some guys, it's just, you know, getting stronger, but not everyone can gain velocity also, you know.
And it's not like the reason that guys don't throw harder is because they spent their time working on a third or fourth pitch.
Yeah, no, that has nothing to do with it.
You know, it's not like this is a, you know, RPG where you have points you have to allot to the fastball or to the slider, and they're allotting the points to the slider. Otherwise, you'd have a whole bunch of guys throwing 98 in the big leagues. Well, I guess that's what you kind of do have right now, but...
Yeah, they're already working on that regularly, you know, trying to get stronger, trying to throw a little bit harder. I mean, it's not like something that they never thought of, you know. It's not like something they can suddenly make some change and decide to do, basically, you know.
It's not like it's, you know, how you see some guys, they'll like drop their arm slot or something just to kind of give them a different look and see if they make the majors as like a, you know, lefty-only guy by dropping them low, like a Chad Bradford type deal or something.
I think it was Kyle Martin. They raised his arm slot and improved his velocity. Like things like that can happen, but you know, it's case, like Ian said, case by case and limited.
Or what they're trying to do to Carlos Marmol, right? I mean, they're tweaking his arm slot. So
the Brian Bannister special,
right. But it's not as easy as taking this failed pitching prospect, you know, giving him a drop and drive delivery and telling him to hit the weights for a year, and all of a sudden he's going to come back throwing 98. I guess is the way what my point is.
Well, and also it's sometimes throwing harder isn't necessarily better. You know, if you're throwing harder but you have no movement on your fastball, you're going to get hit at the big league level.
Right.
Versus, you know, I'd rather have someone throwing like 92, 94 with great movement than throwing like 98 straight as an arrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and Matt is right. Martin was someone who kind of, what he alluded to, who was throwing like low three quarters in college, and he was like 88 to 90. And then the Red Sox moved him over the top, which made sense considering he's like 6'8".
Right.
And now he's like 94, 95.
Right.
And he's looked pretty good this spring. So, yeah, it's some things it's mechanical, but again, if it was easy, everyone would do it. It's not. And it's, you know, not all guys are going to gain velocity. Like Henry Owens is another good example of, you know, he kind of had a similar build to Trey Ball when he came into the system, and his fastball hasn't increased velocity at all because he just doesn't, you know, for some reason or whatever reason it is. He just doesn't, you know, he hasn't been able to do that, so.
Well, with Ball, his velocity is worse than it was in high school.
Yeah, it's regressed. I mean,
it's regressed, so.
I think there's got to be something going on there. I don't know if it's mental, whether he's in his own head at this point, but yeah, he should not be regressing from where he was in high school. Yeah,
we'll see what happens with him this year. Thanks for the question, Bob. Now we'll move on to a little bit of a thought question, maybe. We thought this would be a good kind of longer form question. And this was an email we got from frequent podcast emailer Cody. And Cody asks, can you guys do an all underrated Red Sox prospects team? And I thought that was a really interesting question that Cody asked. Thanks for that question, Cody. We've had this one in the hopper since October. So I kind of wanted to get to that. I thought this would be a great opportunity to do so. So just quickly, just to introduce the concept to me, I don't know how you guys thought of this. To me, it was players who – underrated is kind of tough because there aren't many publications that go as deep as we do into the system. But basically any player who I felt may not necessarily get their due in a general sense, you know, that may – be worthy of a little higher ranking than what they tend to be, whether, you know, it might be a guy that I'm higher on than you guys, and that may be how you guys feel that you're higher on a guy than the rest of the editors of the site are, or maybe other publications, or just people who may be worthy of buzz that don't get it. But I thought this would be a really interesting question for us to do, and so we kind of prepped a little bit beforehand. I guess we'll go position by position, and we may as well start behind the plate. Does either of you want to start this, or should I just go ahead and throw out my guy, I guess.
You see figures, so go for it.
Okay, I'm trying to pull up the email where I sent you guys who I would do. It was in Cody's email, which I have already...
I have it up.
I have it up, too.
I'll have it up in a second. I'll just keep going back.
You're going to edit this part out.
No, I've got it. Here we go. Okay.
So I'm going to make a prediction.
Yeah. All right. No. So a catcher for me, there were, I think, a number of guys that I think would be worthy of it. The guy that came to mind for me was Jordan Procession, who split last year between Greenville and Salem. He strikes me as he's currently ranked in our top 40. We have him actually at number 29. He's a native Canadian, which I think always leads to underratedness in a baseball sense, but drafted out of Northern Kentucky in the 14th round of 2014. He strikes me as a guy that could really potentially be a pretty good defensive catcher, a pretty good catcher to run a pitching staff, if not necessarily a great offensive catcher. How about you guys? Ian, I think I have a feeling who you'll pick as your catcher.
I liked your pick, though, I will say. There were talked to a few scouts who saw him in Greenville and came back with some very nice things to say about him. So I do like that one. But actually, I'm going to go a little different and take someone who is has recently converted to catcher in Ben Moore. He was drafted out of Alabama. He was an outfielder there. But the Red Sox converted him to catcher, and he was really impressive in spring training last year, before he suffered a torn ACL and ultimately ended up not even playing last year, I don't think. Did he? Or did he play a little bit?
He played a little, not a lot.
He got 20 games.
Should mention, I think he caught early in his college career and then moved to outfield, and they moved him back to catcher, is what it was.
Yeah, he did play 24 games, hit .319, didn't strike out very often, which kind of what we saw in spring training was just, you know, he's a polished bat, good contact skills, and he actually had a little bit of pop too. So he was someone I was looking forward to seeing, and the question was going to be defensively, but obviously, you know, he had that setback, but we'll see how he returns from injury. And if he continues to hit and can show some defensive ability back there, he's an interesting player.
Mm-hmm. Actually ranked number 50 currently in the Sox prospects rankings. Matt, how about you? Do you have anyone different?
Well, I guess those are two good ones. I guess I'd go off the board if I had to choose another one in JT Watkins. You know, I mean, I haven't actually seen him a lot personally, but I know he's a guy that Ian's seen and sort of likes his skill set. Probably not.
Me too.
Necessarily. Oh, okay. You too. Sorry.
Yeah, you were. Chris was there in Greenville when we saw him.
Right. Okay. So both of you kind of like him a little bit, and but probably maybe not a major leaguer, but. You know, a good solid player who he was a little underrated, I'd say.
Yeah, he wasn't the jag that I thought he was going to be, because he's the son of a Red Sox scout. So I thought that was a pure nepotism pick. He was picked in the 10th round back in, that have been 2013, Ian?
2012,
yeah.
Because then he served in the military for 2 years.
Yes. So he was picked in 2012, and he was picked in the 10th round so that the Red Sox could give him a $1,000 signing bonus and save the rest of the 125 grand for that slot to go to other players. In particular, a lot of that money was probably for Ty Buttrey signing in the 4th round. So, but yeah, we did like him a lot. That's a good pick as a very good org catcher in the, you know, in a way we could say that well of him. Moving to first base, I will go first, because to me, I honestly don't think there's a first baseman in the system who's underrated.
No, there isn't. There's barely any first baseman in the system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Matt, did you have anyone at first base?
Not really. I was going to say, like, Travis Shaw before his major league time, I think might have qualified. Yep. if he hadn't, you know, done fireworks at the end of last year. Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
The mayor, can you refer to him by his real name, the mayor of Ding Dong City?
Really, is that?
That's courtesy of our friend of the site, Jared Carabas. That's his nickname for him.
Oh, okay.
So, gotcha. I like that one.
Did not get that reference at all initially.
You can feel free to edit that out.
No, we'll put it in. Someone else no, would we'll get leave that. It. I like it. We like shouting out Jared.
I'm sure listeners will get it.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, just to people, in case anyone's thinking, like, oh, what about Josh Ockamy? I think, we've got him at 33, and I think that's right about where he should be. Same thing with Sam Travis. I think he's ranked right about where he should be. I don't know. I just think there's a lot of first basemen in the system.
I do Nick think Long, though, Sam, he falls into that.
Yeah, Nick Long, I think is ranked
Travis, though,
be.
Is ranked correctly, but I think people overlook him somewhat, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How about second base? Matt, why don't you start with second?
Let's see. I guess I'd go with... Well, the most obvious one to me would be Wendell Rijo. I'm probably stealing that from one of you, but it doesn't seem like, I mean, it seems like he's rated appropriately on our site. Maybe, you know, maybe we're high on him. I'm not sure, but I mean, we are compared to other sites. So that's where I think he's kind of underrated within the industry in general. You know, he's got some bat there, and I think Chris, you thought he was decent in the field, maybe a little lackadaisical at times, but some definite tools there, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I he would be my pick too, just because I, you know, for example, Baseball America's top second baseman list had him ranked behind Mauricio Dubon, which for me, maybe I think Dubon maybe has a higher floor in that he's got a better chance of being a major league utility player. But I think Riho of the two is the one that I would bank on having a chance to actually start in the majors, just because I think the bat profile's better, even though he profiles only at second base defensively, unlike Dubon, who can play a little bit of short and I think could play a little bit of third base in a pinch. I like Riho a lot, and I think he really gets overlooked sometimes. Ian, did you have anybody else for second?
Yeah, I guess, well, this is a funny, you'll see why this is funny a second, but I kind of like Chad De La Guerra a little bit. He was in Lowell last year, and he was one of their better hitters. And that was the one thing he could do is hit, because I don't think he's a second baseman. but he can hit a little bit, and, you know, I'll take a chance on anybody you can hit, because if you can hit enough to make it up to close to the big leagues, they'll find position for you.
Not being a second baseman, do you think he moves to, like, a corner or something?
It'd have to be like a corner outfield, which is a major issue. But, you know, he can always maybe can improve a little bit at second base. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Another guy that I thought of, I'll just mention the name, is Jagger Rusconi, who we didn't see a lot out of last year after he was drafted. For whatever reason, he was announced as an outfielder, but he's a second baseman. Played that in the pros. I remember seeing Emil Sade in Greenville and telling him, you know, he got announced as an outfielder when they drafted him, and he was kind of very surprised by that. So, He's kind of an intriguing high school second baseman out of California who they drafted last year. What about third base, Ian? We'll start with you.
Third base, I don't really have anyone.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton of options.
Maybe Victor Acosta, but the same thing. He's not a third baseman, so.
Yeah. Matt, do you have anybody for third?
I mean, not really. The only direction I could go, and this really doesn't fit, but Michael Chavis, in a way, seems like he's been forgotten about. Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't fit exactly, but I think that he could bounce back and still have a very good career, and people are kind of forgetting about him in comparison to, you know, most of their top prospects since he had a bit of a down season.
Yeah, I think he's kind of underrated at the plate, but at the same time can be overrated a little bit. I don't know. He's weird. I get what you're saying with him. The guy that I thought was interesting a little bit was Roldani Baldwin, who has caught a little bit, but I think I'm going to put him as a third baseman. He signed as a catcher, played in the Dominican Summer League in 2014. Last year, he hit .288, .362, .397 in the Gulf Coast League with 3 home runs, and got a late season cup of coffee in Lowell for 3 games. I think he's kind of interesting. I don't really know a whole lot about him, but he's a guy that kind of intrigues me a little bit at third base. Maybe not underrated, probably more intriguing than anything. Unlike the positions we've been through, shortstop, I think, has a lot of potential options. And I'll actually let you two guys go, because I know that if I go first, I'm going to steal a guy that I think Ian's going to take. But we'll start with you, Matt.
Well, why don't you go ahead, Ian?
There's only one answer here. It's Jeremy Rivera.
Right. I didn't want to steal him either.
He can't hit, but he can play the field. And if you're a shortstop and you can play the field and run a little bit, then yeah, you can be on my team any day. So he's not an impact guy or anything like that. He's probably an org guy realistically, but if he ever could hit a little bit, he has a pretty good chance to play in the big leagues at some point, just cause he's a very good defensive shortstop.
Well, so for an all field, no hit guy, is he more Jose Vinicio, Su-Wei Lin, or Devin Marrero on the scale of, like, is going to flame out in high A versus, like, could at least get close to the majors?
No, I think he can get close to the majors because he has feel for hit, and he has good, like, bat control, and he just doesn't really have bat speed, and he's not very strong. So his issue is that when he makes contact, you know, he knows how to use all fields. He knows how to place the ball, put it on the ground, you know. It's just there's literally zero power. And when you don't have any power, pitchers, especially when you get to, you know, double and triple A, are just going to throw you fastballs up in the zone, and you have to prove that you can hit them. And I'm not sure he can do that. But he has an idea of what he's doing at the plate. It's just physically, he's like 5'8", 5'9", you know, 150 pounds. It's just not there, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some other guys I thought of here, Yomar Valentin, who was drafted in the 20th round last year, signed for $130K. He played in the Gulf Coast League last year at shortstop. Didn't get to see him a whole lot. He only played in 24 games, but he's kind of intriguing. And I'll also throw a couple names out in Carlos Tovar and Ricardo Kubian. Are two guys who mostly have played in rookie ball. Tovar played in the Gulf Coast League last year and got a late season cup of coffee in Lowell. And actually, Kubian, I think is how it's pronounced. It's got the whole double L thing. He missed last year after being suspended for violating the drug policy. So he hasn't played at all, but he's from Venezuela. I don't think he got an overslot bonus or anything, but he started for the Red Sox in the Liga Paralela in Venezuela at shortstop this past winter. So he's a guy that I'm at least going to see if there's anything there this year. Again, probably more sleepers than underrated. Outfield, why don't we just each put to go from left to right? And I'll start because I've been nice and deferred to you guys. Left to right for me, I'm going to go Henry Ramos in right field. I think obviously the injury issue, maybe the injury issue has him ranked appropriately, but I think he could prove very quickly that he's underrated if he hits this year. Yoan Ibar is the guy I pick in center field. I think because of the breakout that Luis Alexander Basabe had last year, people are kind of forgetting about him. He spent the year in the Gulf Coast League. I think he could, in theory, potentially have a similar breakout this season. And in left field, I'll take a guy who we haven't seen yet in I keep forgetting his first name, but Alberto Guayamaro, who's the big Red Sox international free agent signee this past signing period. He accepted $300,000 because that's the most the Red Sox could give him. It's $300K, right?
But he
was ranked in BA Baseball America's top 30 international prospects, and I'm very interested to see what he does this year, presumably in the Dominican Summer League. I think you're going to put him in an outfield corner, even though we have him as a center fielder on our depth chart. So maybe I'm going to go in and fix that when we get off this podcast. But he intrigues me a little bit as a potential guy who people aren't really paying attention to, but he could be the sort of breakout international guy this year. How about you guys, Ian?
I guess I'll start in left field. I kind of liked a little bit of Kyrie Washington, what I saw with him in Lowell. He obviously didn't perform very well, and he had a small sample size, but liked his BP. He had some power and got a couple good reports on him from the draft process about just his makeup and work ethic. So I think he's someone that, could potentially, if he, has a decent year in Greenville, make his way up the rankings pretty quickly. And then, oh, right, you want the whole outfield, sorry. Center field, I don't really have anyone. You stole the only one that I would take. And so I agree, Ibar. Right field, I think Danny Mars kind of gets a little underrated. Again, he's one of those guys, I don't think he's an impact guy, or even the odds of him being a big leaguer aren't great. But he has some feel for hit, he can run a little bit, and he plays a good enough outfield that he's someone who I think could stick around with it, you know, in an organization for a while.
Nice. Matt, how about you?
In right field, I might go with Mike Myers. He can hit a little bit. Did I say right field or left field?
Well, you said right field, and that's where we have him on our depth chart, but I'm realizing he should be in left.
Yeah, I'm looking at that too.
Yeah, he's definitely left field
/ center field.
Yeah, that's another thing I'm going to go in and fix right now.
So he's my left fielder. This is kind of tough because you guys took
a lot of guys.
Yeah.
If you want to punt, we wouldn't hold it against you.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I've always sort of followed Joseph Monge. I don't really know why, but for some reason I've been interested in him. And he had an okay year as a pretty young 20-year-old in Greenville last year. I'm not really sure there's much there, but he was really young and they started him in Greenville, so that sort of interested me. I think that's probably as far as I can go.
Yeah, another name that kind of stuck out to me as a potential guy for this was Derek Miller as an outfielder, yeah. So maybe you could take him as your right fielder. He's older college guy. I think he was a college senior when they drafted him. He's a guy that kind of stuck out, that caught my eye a little bit in spring training last year, and he was having a pretty good year until he went down with a shoulder injury at a game I was at, actually, and I think that ended his season. So he's kind of an interesting sort of under the radar guy. What about on the mound, fellas? And I guess maybe just, you know, when I emailed you guys, I think I did a righty and a lefty, both starting and relieving. But maybe for time's sake, we'll just go pick a starter and a reliever. Does that sound good? Matt, do you want to go first since we kind of took all your outfielders?
Sure.
Let's see. I'm actually going to pick a guy that I didn't tell you guys I was going to take. So feel free to be crazy here.
All right. Well, I guess I'd take Pennington as a starter.
Ah, that was who I was talking about.
Oh,
that's fine. Go for it, Josh Pennington. He's a good pick.
Why is he listed as a starter?
Well, because he's starting for right now.
Oh, I guess he did start last year. You're right.
Yeah.
Never mind. I saw him in the bullpen out of Instructs. So that's what I was. But yeah, you're right.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Actually, speaking of Instructs, I think it was Chaz had a pretty good report on him from Instructs. And he was sitting mid-90s, I believe. He missed his first season in the Red Sox. When the Red Sox drafted him, they knew he was going to have Tommy John surgery. So they got a little bit of a bargain there since they knew that was on the horizon. if one of you want to jump in with a starter, that's fine.
Do you want to, or should I?
Yeah, sure. I'll say Christopher Acosta. He was the other big international free agent in the year that will be forever known as the Anderson Espinosa class. Mm-hmm. And I think he got just a little less money. He got $1.5 million. But I think he just kind of gets slept on because Espinosa is going to get all the pub. But some decent reports on him, and he's someone that we unfortunately did not get to see live last year. But those who did see him in Instructs said he was throwing pretty well. So he's someone I'm very interested to see this coming season, probably making a stateside debut.
Hopefully in spring training we get to get some eyes.
Yeah, he's one of the guys on the top of the list of we need to see.
List. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, for sure. I guess as far as a starter, those two guys would have topped the list for me, I think. Travis Lakins, I think, is getting to the point where he's no longer becoming underrated. I think Keith Law had him 10th on his list.
Yeah.
Baseball America, Alex Speer had him 16th on his list. We've bumped him up into the high 20s, I guess, depending on he's in the top 25 on our list, I guess. And depending on what we see in spring training and during the season, he could rise really quick. So he's a guy who they drafted last year as a sophomore out of Ohio State, and I think the sixth round, who could move quickly.
We have seen him. It's just the question.
We've seen him. It's just
a starter or reliever. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. As far as relievers, Matt, do you have someone?
Yeah, I go with Kyle Martin. He's in Portland, and you'd think would get a little more looks. But at the other hand, they have a lot of relievers in the upper minors that are a lot more prospects in the top two bullpen, minor league teams.
Top two levels, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He struck out 48 and 42 innings last year. And I think there's something there. And he's a guy I've been following. And he also went to the Arizona Fall League and did quite well there, but it was only 5 appearances. But
yeah, I just noticed that. I'm almost wondering if he got hurt again or if he was on an inning. Like that's very strange that he only pitched 5 games.
Yeah.
So that'd be interesting. Although he pitched yesterday in the college games, so
and they didn't know who he was because they were telling Chris Martin's story.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
Gosh, no, really?
Yeah, they were talking about his like career in Japan and being a working at UPS and stuff. And it's like, nope, not him.
Different guy, guys. Ian, who do you got? Because I got any number of guys I could pick from.
He's someone I talked about a lot after Instructs. Luis Isla. The lefty they acquired from the Giants. For the Diaz. Mm-hmm. So he was terrible with the Giants last year, but he was in the California League. And so you kind of have to take – I mean, we remember the year the Red Sox were in Lancaster, how much of a disaster it was. So you kind of have to take California League stats with a grain of salt. But good in 2 appearances with Salem. But how he threw an Instructs was the best stuff of probably any lefty they have at the organization. I'm trying to think if there's anyone. It's better stuff than Jerez. Is there any other lefty I'm forgetting? Like, I'm talking about in the minors. Obviously not Rodriguez.
I'm assuming you're not counting Johnson or Owens.
Oh, no, it's better raw stuff. I mean, it's a better fastball,
I guess. Stuff, that's true.
Yeah, it's a better fastball, but that's what I should have said. That's what I meant to say. It's got the best fastball of any lefty they have
in
the organization.
Slider,
and, too. He was just really impressive, and he's someone that I think if they commit to a bullpen role – could shoot up the system pretty quickly. And I know he's already in the top 20, but you know, he's someone that is really interesting. And I think he'd probably start in Portland. So he could, he's someone I wouldn't be shocked to see play his way onto the big league roster at some point this year if he's on the 40 man, which I don't know. He's, oh, he has to be added this offseason. So yeah, I wouldn't rule it out.
Better fastball than Jalen Beeks.
Yeah. Yep. He's like 90, he was like 93, 96. I think I have 197.
Right. I'll take a guy that people sleep on in Chandler Shepherd. He's currently ranked in our top 40, actually, but I think he's a guy that really could be talked about in the same breath as some of the guys that they have higher up in the minors. But he had a pretty good year last year. I really liked what I saw out of him early when I saw Greenville in, I think, May. He also pitched in the Arizona. He's ranked 32 on the site right now, one spot behind Kyle Martin. But he pitched great in Greenville early in the season, got a very quick promotion to Salem, which was, I think, pretty appropriate for him. But he, you know, struck out 46 and 52 and a third. Was one of those situations where he'd pitch great for a stretch, pitch kind of poorly for a couple games, I think, something like that. Went to Scottsdale to the Arizona Fall League, and in 11 and a third innings, struck out 16 guys, walked six, and allowed five hits. So I think he's a guy that we might see move quickly this year. It would not surprise me. I think he's going to start in Portland personally. And I think from there, it would not surprise me. The only thing keeping him from going higher quickly, I think, is just, like you mentioned, how deep they are in the bullpen in Pawtucket and Portland, as Matt mentioned. So he's a guy that I'm really going to... Part of it is when you see a guy and you see him pitch well, he becomes kind of your guy, right? And so I think that's kind of what he is for me. So good question, Cody. Thanks for that. So our next question comes to us from Michael. And Michael asks, hey, guys, glad the season is here and you guys are back. I remember reading somewhere that Dombrowski did some restructuring of the pro scouting department during the offseason. Any idea of what sort of changes he made? From what I remember, it was not a house cleaning with major personnel changes, but more of a reorganization. I know I told Matt beforehand I wasn't going to read this one, but it's just, we know what you guys know. We don't know anything under the, you know, behind the scenes there or anything. I know Matt and I were kind of clueless on this one. Ian, do you know what he's referring to?
No, I honestly have not paid attention to that, because what they do pro scouting wise doesn't really impact us unless they make a trade. So,
right.
Yeah, I honestly haven't. If it was an amateur thing, I would say we'd probably be more clued. We'd have at least paid more attention, but no, I have not.
Yeah, I mean, just looking quickly, Jen McCaffrey, who writes for MassLive.com and I think the Springfield Republican, who does a great job over there, wrote an article about it that ran October 15th, that if you Google Dombrowski scouting department, it talks about how they made some moves on the international professional scouting side, but that's just kind of the same sort of reshuffling that happens every year. I don't think it's any kind of major change. They have seven people within the scouting department cover four organizations from low A through up through its major league team. There will be three additional people in charge of scouting each major league team in Frank Wren, Eddie Bain, and Steve Peck. And the recently added Brad Sloan will be part of that team as well, but will focus on scouting in the Far East, Cuba, and other international areas of interest. I suggest checking that article out if you want to read the specifics, but it's nothing unique or particularly noteworthy. I think it's just kind of your standard sort of reshuffling of guys. But thanks for the question, Michael. Our next question, I like this one. It's kind of a silly question, but I'll turn it into something a little less silly. It's from Alex Bellefleur. And he asks, is Travis Shaw a future Hall of Famer? 100% serious question. Thanks. Alex is obviously referring to the fact that Shaw went deep again today. And I'm going to look at, is that three or four bombs so far this spring? At any rate, seriously though, I guess A, normal caveat about spring training stats mean nothing. But B, I think we talked about this a little bit recently on our recent podcast, but expecting, what do you guys expect out of Travis Shaw this year other than, you know, I think, like I said on the podcast with Jim, I think he takes some of the Brock Holt at-bats, but just more out of being maybe a little bit more of an appropriate guy to take those at-bats where Holt was sort of shoehorned into some situations that you wouldn't necessarily want to use that guy on. Is that what you guys think?
Yeah, well, I looked it up. He's batting .571, .625. 857 in five games. So
how many home runs?
Just one. But oh, Shaw? But that probably doesn't.
I think it's two now.
Oh, yeah, today two.
Today, I was gonna say. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, I mean, I think I agree with what you said. It seems like a good, very good bench option that maybe they didn't have exactly that role last year. And it'll allow Holt to focus a little more on the positions he excels at a little more in second. And, you know, not a bad shortstop. You know, first base was not really the, you know, the appropriate position for Holt, I'd say. It's more of a need-based thing. But, yeah, I mean, he's always been, like, I heard actually some national fantasy guys talking about, you know, stats in minor leagues. And he didn't have great stats last year, but I always remember them in the coaching staff in AAA always talking about him as you know, the center of the lineup, sort of the big hitter in the lineup. They're always really talked about him as one of their best hitters. So I always sort of took note of that and thought of him as a little bit better than his stats maybe showed last year. So, I mean, I think, you know, last year was a bit of a lucky streak in the majors that he got on. But at the same time, I don't think, you know, the power was a little lucky. But
he's also probably not as bad as the slump he had either. You know, it's not exactly. that was him. Yep. It was regression to the mean, but it's not saying that's who he is either.
Somewhere between the two. And then if Hanley, you know, can't handle the position defensively, then obviously he becomes very important. And we'll get a nice long look at, you know, just what kind of major leaguer he can be, I think. So, I mean, I think whether he can actually be a starter if that happens is very much a question. But as a bench role, I like him for sure.
Yeah. Sounds great. Sounds right. A couple of house cleaning things, too, we should probably mention, because we got questions about this guy last time. We did a lot of reader questions on the show. Carsten Whitson was released this week, for those who may have missed it. Right-handed pitcher taken out of the University of Florida in the 11th round in 2014, right? No idea what the deal is there. We'll maybe endeavor to find out when we're down at camp. But
I think it's
almost certainly
never got healthy.
Yeah, I mean, that's really got to be it.
Because I saw him throw it after the 2014 season at Instructs, and he looked great. Compared to what he did with Lowell. Because I saw him with Lowell, he was terrible. He was like 88, 90. And then in Instructs, he was popping like 94, 96. I think he topped out. Let me look. I think he topped out at like 90. Where is it? I can't find it anyway. But he was really good. And then John Mioli talked to him during spring training last year, and he said he was feeling, you know, healthy and close to his old self. And then he didn't get assigned to a team, and obviously since then,
he fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I just think it has to be health related, and it's unfortunate. I mean, but that's the game, you know. People get hurt.
Yeah, I pulled up your article. He was, during his best stretch, he worked 94 to 95, commanding the ball down in the zone. Struggles finding a release point with the slider. It was harder when it was, but it was harder at 84 to 86 than it was in July when it was 77 to 84. Changeup was at 85, firm, some fade. So that was the report at that point. But anyway, thanks for, that wasn't a question, that was us just talking. Thanks for everyone for asking questions about him that led to us talking about him. Our last listener question is from Michael. And he has two questions. The first one we're going to admittedly kind of gloss over because it's a little silly and he acknowledges it. But he says, in an alternate universe in which Mookie Betts would be playing in Greenville in 2016, what would you expect his line to be? Conversely, what kind of line would you expect from Anderson Espinosa in the majors in 2016? I presume he means you take major leaguer Mookie Betts and put him in Greenville, and you take, you know, present day Anderson Espinosa and put him in the majors. I would expect Betts to hit probably 4-something. That's it. Take that Travis Shaw line you just read, maybe. Although probably not that over a full season. Does that sound right? I wonder what do you guys think about the other one, Espinosa, in the majors right now? He probably gets shelled, but it's still great stuff.
Yeah, you kind of wonder if you actually put him in the bullpen, how
he would play.
Look. Because we have seen that with other teams. Like, I was thinking about Toronto last season with, like, was it Osuno and another guy?
Miguel Castro, right.
Yeah, just kind of thrust them into the closer role, like out of high A or something. They were a little bit older, but, you know, you kind of wonder. I mean, he's got such good stuff. You wonder if it would play a little bit out of the bullpen, at least. But it wouldn't be a good idea, obviously.
Yeah.
I was going to say it depends on the role you put him in. If he's a starter, I think he gets lit. Mm-hmm. But in the bullpen. I don't think he'd be great, but and it's a terrible idea, obviously. But yeah. I think that when you're, you know, when you have a high 90s fastball with the movement that he does and his breaking ball, I would already call it's probably average already, and it'll flash plus. That's, you know, I think he could get some outs there.
I would say taking Espinoza right now and putting him in a bullpen role just because he'd probably be pretty good there would be like taking a bottle of wine you're aging and just cracking it open because you're thirsty.
Like, I mean, it would be a fireable offense if someone if they actually did that. That's just no.
Well, I mean, you look at like Jose Fernandez. He didn't throw a pitch in Double A or Triple A, right? I mean, they called him right up from High A. So again, this is also Jose Fernandez, who immediately became an ace in the major leagues. But you know, we say we have to be patient with Espinoza, but who knows, man? Depending on how he looks this year.
Jose, that Fernandez situation would be more comparable to calling him up next year.
Next year.
You know, because he hasn't even pitched in.
Or even after next year.
Yeah, right.
Because he got drafted out of high school. So, you know, Espinoza's already younger than that still. So,
And I think Fernandez was old when he was drafted, like for his
draft class.
Yeah. He also did pitch. He pitched once in Double A.
Okay.
So he was drafted in, what was he? I'm trying to figure this out. Oh, he got 2 years in the minors. He pitched in 2011 in the Penn League and the GCL, mm-hmm. and then in 2012 in the Florida State League and the Sally League. Right. So, yeah, if it'd be after next year would be the equivalent. And Espinoza would still be younger.
Yeah, I was going to say he's 20 right. when he debuted, so still got a couple years.
Right. But his real question, how does the organization determine where to place a guy like Espinoza when their talent makes them head and shoulders better than anyone their age, but their age makes it unusual to place him in a league where his day-to-day interactions would exclusively be with folks who are at a very different point in development as people? Thanks for the questions, Michael. I guess the short answer to the second question is just you place them where their talent dictates they play, right? I mean, that's why he got a game in Greenville last year.
Yeah, talent trumps it.
Yeah, I think, that's for the most part. But I think, like, you know, like they might start someone at a level for a couple months or a month, like, you know, I don't know, like Moncada maybe in High A. Salem might be an example of, you know, maybe has the talent to play in Double A, but they don't want to. It's not the exact same thing, but maybe the weather situation, you know, there's always mitigating factors, which, you know, what the emailer mentioned could be one of them. So I don't think that's crazy.
Well, I think the one exception is the complex leagues and Lowell, because to me, the difference, at least in what the listener is referring to in terms of like, you know, the people you are with in Greenville are not that much different than the people you are with in Salem. Right. It's in theory, they are, just to throw numbers out there, like 21-year-olds as opposed to 22-year-olds. You know, that's not that big a difference. But the thing is, when you are in the complex leagues, but when I say that, I mean the Gulf Coast League and the Dominican Summer League, you are like living with your teammates. I guess it happens later too, but it's, you know, you're not just kind of out on your own in the city, in theory, although the Red Sox don't have, like, they have, not barracks, but they have, I think the players live at the Dominican Academy. In the Gulf Coast League, there's no, you know, living quarters at the complex, although, frankly, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I think the Twins recently added
housing. Yeah, the Twins housing. Have dorms.
The Twins have dorms. I wouldn't mind seeing dorms there. But in Lowell, the players stay in the dorms at U-Lowell, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah. So there's a little bit more supervision there. It's not like there's hall monitors or anything, but you
no,
live right
are.
Next to the, oh, there, no, are. No,
there are hall monitors. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Some of the coaches live in the dorms also, and there's like bed checks and stuff.
All right. Well, so that's, I mean, that, you know, living in Lowell is also a little bit different than living in Fort Myers, AKA Fort Misery. You know, you can only get in so much trouble at the Gulf Coast Town Center, you know, but true. But, though I think it's a little different when you have players who are, you know, maybe don't speak English too great yet, who are adjusting to American culture, who are adjusting to that kind of thing. And I think that's part of why, for example, Yoan Moncada didn't go straight to Greenville out of opening, you know, on opening day straight out of camp, because part of it is adjusting socially to being in the United States. There's a lot of things. I mean, I love the anecdote from this off season when taxes got taken out of his paycheck or from last year when taxes got taken out of his paycheck and he called his agent asking what the heck was going on because he's like, I agreed to get paid this much, not this much. So he didn't quite understand that the U.S. government takes some of that money. So that it's interesting. But so there's a little bit there in terms of social, but otherwise I think it's where your talent dictates.
Well, I was going to add, too, that, you know, once you get – if you're a top prospect like that, but mostly any player, once you get up to the majors, you know, you're going to be dealing with that situation where you're the youngest or one of the youngest guys.
Yeah.
Or even in AAA, you know, for the most part. So, you know, it's something that they have to get used to. So, you know, it's just part of the lay of the land, I think.
Yeah, and yeah, so you might as well get used to it in the minors, right? It's – you know, I mean, look at these guys that don't face pitchers who are older than them in the minors type deal. You know, it's, hey, you know, you might as well get used to it because that's what's going to happen in the majors. You know, when you're 22 in the majors, they're not going to feel bad for you when you're facing the crafty 31-year-old making $20 million a year, you know. So you may as well get used to facing older guys then. But thanks for the questions, Michael. And that actually cleans out our podcast listener queue. So if you've got more questions, things you want to know about, things you want us to talk about, podcast@soxprospects.com. We will eventually get to all of them. So please send in your questions, comments, concerns, and we'll get to them eventually on an episode of the show. So gentlemen, unless we have any final parting thoughts, let's wrap it up.
Are you going to throw it to the other our other question now?
That's what I did before. You didn't catch that?
Okay.
When I awkwardly threw to a question and we didn't answer it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering what was going on there. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I figured I'd throw it in the middle. But yeah, so thank you to these guys for hopping on real quick. Thank you, Ian, for getting your technical problems fixed. Thank you to the Ludlow Thieves for our music. Thank you to SeatGeek for being the sponsor. Again, that's SP20. Put in that promo code, get a $20 rebate on your first purchase at SeatGeek. Thank
and
you to all of
out.
You. Yeah, and it'll help us out. Thank you to all of you who are listening. Thank you for streaming. Rate and review. It really helps us out. We appreciate it. And next time we talk to you, we'll probably be... We might record something at spring training. If not, we'll record something soon after we get back. Scouting report on what we see at the field and what we see at the table at Blue Sushi. So thank you, everybody. And we'll be back in your eardrums very soon.